A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been looking at international travel with his Vyvanse prescription and hit a wall that anyone who's ever tried to carry medication across a border knows intimately. Here's what he wrote. He's been digging into the whole idea of international standardization, the moments when humanity actually gets together and says, "We're going to define how this works." And his question is, why can't we do that with health data? His vision is something like an international health card, the way there's an international driving license. One card with an NFC tag that lists your conditions, your prescriptions, the authorizing doctor, the state the doctor practices in, so every prescription links to regional trade names and dispensing systems. It'd tell you whether you're transiting or visiting a country where your meds are legally problematic. And maybe it could even let you fill prescriptions abroad according to what your health plan covers. He wants to know why this feels like a utopian fantasy, when the fundamental data to make it work already exists.
The Vyvanse example is almost too perfect, because it's not some obscure edge case. The CDC Yellow Book explicitly calls out lisdexamfetamine and amphetamine. Dextroamphetamine is medications considered illegal at some destinations. Japan bans amphetamine-containing meds outright, even with a valid U.S. prescription. You show up at Narita with your bottle, your doctor's note, your pharmacy label, doesn't matter. You're carrying a controlled substance under Japanese law, and they can detain you.
And that's the thing Daniel's really poking at. The information exists. The CDC Yellow Book documents this. His doctor knows what he prescribed. Japan's drug laws are published. The pieces are all sitting there. Nobody's connected them into something a traveler can actually use.
Right. So let's start by unpacking what this utopian card would actually need to do. It's not one system, it's at least four stacked on top of each other. First, it needs a globally accessible record of your prescriptions, what you take, dosage, frequency, the prescribing doctor. Second, it needs a drug legality database that maps every medication to every country's scheduling rules, updated in real time. Third, it needs a doctor verification layer. Is this prescriber actually licensed, and in which jurisdiction? And fourth, if you want the fill abroad feature, it needs to talk to insurance systems and foreign pharmacies about coverage and reimbursement.
Four systems, and none of them exist at global scale right now. The prescription record alone, in the US, that's fragmented across state-level prescription drug monitoring programs. Each state runs its own database. Some talk to each other, some don't.
And they weren't built for this. PDMPs were designed to catch doctor shopping and opioid abuse, not to generate a tidy API response for a customs officer in Singapore. The data format in California's system doesn't match the format in Florida's, let alone what France's health service expects. Episode 800 covered this, the medical coding problem. ICD-11 is the international standard for diagnoses, but countries map it to local billing codes that don't translate cleanly. A diagnosis coded one way in the US might map to three different codes in Germany's system depending on which insurer is paying.
So even step one, just getting your prescription into a portable format, hits a wall of incompatible databases that nobody designed for interoperability.
And step two is worse. The Drug Legality Database. The CDC Yellow Book is the closest thing we have to a traveler-facing reference, and it's a PDF. It's not machine-readable, it's not an API, it's updated on a publication cycle, and it's US-centric. It tells you what the US government thinks you should know, not what every country's actual enforcement practice is.
The INCB, the International Narcotics Control Board, coordinates controlled substances across borders. They maintain the schedules for narcotics and psychotropic substances, but they don't cover every prescription medication. They don't provide traveler guidance. They're a regulatory body for governments, not a consumer tool.
And here's the thing about drug scheduling. It's not just a binary legal or illegal. Japan bans amphetamines outright. Some countries allow them with a pre-approved import permit that takes weeks to process. Others technically ban them, but don't enforce at customs unless you're carrying commercial quantities. Some countries ban the active ingredient, but allow a prodrug form. Vyvanse is lisdexamfetamine, which is a prodrug. Your body converts it to dextroamphetamine. A country's law might not even mention lisdexamfetamine by name, but the customs officer sees amphetamine on the metabolite list, and that's it.
So the database would need to encode not just the law as written, but the law as enforced, for every medication, in every country, updated continuously. Who maintains that? Who's liable when it's wrong?
Nobody wants that job. That's the real answer. The WHO could theoretically host it, but member states guard health data sovereignty fiercely. The INCB has the controlled substance expertise, but not the mandate for everyday meds. A private company could try it. Some travel insurance firms already offer medication lookup tools, but they're limited to the countries their customers visit most, and they disclaim liability in 6-point font.
The liability question is the silent killer here. If my card says Vyvanse is fine in Japan, and it's not, who gets sued? The database provider? The card issuer? The doctor who wrote the prescription? The travel agent?
All of them, probably, in different jurisdictions with different legal standards. And that's before we get to the privacy problem. An NFC tag on a card that lists your medical conditions. What happens when someone with a phone walks past you on the train?
NFC tags using ISO 14443 standards are cheap. They're everywhere. The hardware is trivial. A passive tag costs pennies. But the security model for medical data on a contactless chip is... I mean, you'd need encryption, mutual authentication, probably a PIN or biometric unlock. At that point, you're not describing a card. You're describing a secure element on a phone.
Which is actually where a lot of this is heading anyway. The EU's European health data space is trying to build cross-border health data interoperability. The idea is that a doctor in Spain can pull up your records from your home GP in Poland. But it's not operational globally, it's not even fully operational within the EU yet, and it's focused on care delivery, not travel convenience.
And the European Health Insurance Card, the EHIC, people hear about that and think it's the model. But the EHIC covers emergency care. You break your leg in Paris, you get treated. It doesn't cover your chronic prescription. You can't walk into a pharmacy in Lyon and get your Vyvanse refilled because you ran out.
The EHIC is a payment mechanism, not a prescription mechanism. It says the French hospital will get reimbursed by your German insurer for treating your emergency. It doesn't authorize dispensing, doesn't verify your prescription, doesn't check drug legality. It's a billing shortcut, not a health card.
So the closest thing we have to Daniel's vision is a billing shortcut that doesn't do any of the things he wants. That's not encouraging.
Let's talk about the doctor verification piece, because that one's sneaky hard. Daniel mentioned linking each prescription to the authorizing doctor and the state where that doctor is licensed. The assumption is that you can look up a doctor's credentials the way you can look up a driver's license, but there's no global medical registry.
Not even close. In the US, each state medical board maintains its own licensing database. Some are online, some are barely searchable. A doctor's NPI number. The National Provider Identifier is a federal identifier, but it doesn't tell you whether their license is active, whether they've been disciplined, or what they're authorized to prescribe.
And internationally, it's a patchwork. The UK has the General Medical Council Register. Germany has the Approbations Ordnung system. Israel has the Ministry of Health Registry. None of them talk to each other. If a traveler presents a prescription from a doctor in Mumbai, a pharmacist in Toronto has no way to verify that the doctor is real and the prescription is valid.
So Daniel's card would need to either build a global doctor registry from scratch, which is a decades-long political project, or it'd need to federate queries across hundreds of national and state-level databases in real time. Federation sounds more plausible, until you consider that half those databases don't have public APIs, and the ones that do use different data schemas.
And different languages. A prescription written in Hebrew script needs to be machine-readable in kanji. That's not just translation, it's drug name mapping across formularies. The same molecule might be sold under 5 different brand names in 5 different countries. Vyvanse is Elvanse in much of Europe. Same drug, same manufacturer, different name.
That's actually a solvable problem. The WHO's ATC classification system already maps active ingredients to a standardized code. Lisdexamfetamine is NO6BA12 regardless of what it's called locally. The infrastructure for drug name mapping exists. It's used in clinical trials and pharmacovigilance. It's just never been exposed to consumers.
Right, the building blocks are there. ATC codes, ISO standards for health data, the NFC hardware, the INCB schedules, the national prescription databases. The pieces exist. What's missing is the connective tissue and the incentive to build it.
Let's sit with that incentive question. Who actually wants this?
Travelers with chronic conditions, obviously. That's a big population. Something like 1 billion international trips per year pre-pandemic, and a significant fraction of travelers carry prescription medications. But they're diffuse. They don't lobby. They don't even know they need the card until they're standing at customs in Tokyo.
The pharmaceutical industry doesn't want it. Drug companies benefit from market fragmentation, different pricing in different countries, different patent regimes, different regulatory approvals. A system that makes it easy to fill a prescription anywhere would make price arbitrage trivial. Why buy your insulin in the US when the card says you can get it for a tenth of the price in Mexico?
Insurers definitely don't want it. Health plans are national by design. My Israeli health fund has no contract with a pharmacy in Thailand, no mechanism for reimbursement, no negotiated pricing. Building that would require bilateral agreements between every insurer and every pharmacy network in every country. That's not a technical problem, it's an N-squared business negotiation problem.
Governments don't want it either, or at least they don't want to pay for it. The WHO's budget is already stretched. National health ministries are focused on their own citizens, not foreign travelers. And any government that hosts a global health database takes on enormous liability and security risk.
The security risk is worth dwelling on. A global database of prescriptions, conditions, and doctor credentials is a spectacular target. Every intelligence agency, every criminal organization, every data broker would want access. You'd know who takes antidepressants, who takes HIV medication, who takes testosterone, who's on pain management. That's blackmail material, market intelligence, and political compromise in one tidy package.
The international driving license is the comparison Daniel reached for, and I see why. It's a standardized document recognized across borders, but it's a flawed analogy in ways that actually illuminate the problem. A driver's license is a static credential. It says you passed a test. It doesn't change day to day. Your health data changes constantly. New prescriptions, changed dosages, new conditions, resolve conditions. The license model doesn't handle dynamic data.
And driving rules are relatively uniform. A stop sign means stop everywhere. Speed limits vary, but the concept is the same. Drug scheduling is fundamentally arbitrary. It reflects each country's political history, cultural attitudes, and domestic pharmaceutical industry. Japan's amphetamine ban traces back to post-World War II occupation policy. The U.S. schedules cannabis as Schedule 1, while Canada legalized it. These aren't minor variations you can paper over with a lookup table. They're fundamentally different legal frameworks.
The international driving license also doesn't try to do anything complicated. It's a translation of your existing license. It doesn't check whether your license is valid, doesn't verify your identity against a central database, doesn't tell you whether you're allowed to drive in the country you're visiting. It's a piece of paper with your photo and some translated text. The health card Daniel's describing would be doing authentication, verification, legality checking, and payment processing. That's not a translation document. That's a full identity and transaction platform.
There's a deeper difference, too. Driving is a privilege granted by the state you're visiting under its rules. You drive on their roads, you follow their laws. Healthcare is, not that. Your prescription is a relationship between you, your doctor, and your home country's regulatory system. A foreign country has no obligation to honor it, and often has affirmative reasons not to.
So what would it actually take to build this? Let's be concrete. You'd need a treaty. Something like the Vienna Convention on Road Traffic that underpins the International Driving Permit. A multilateral agreement where signatory countries agree to recognize each other's prescriptions under specified conditions. That's a decades-long negotiation, and the US can't even agree with Canada on drug importation.
You'd need a technical standards body to define the data formats, the API specifications, the security requirements, something like GS1, which runs the barcode system for global supply chains. They've managed to get every company on Earth to agree on how to encode a product identifier. It's not impossible, it just took 40 years and was driven by massive commercial incentives that don't exist here.
You'd need a governance body to maintain the drug legality database, resolve disputes, and handle liability. You'd need a funding mechanism, probably a per-transaction fee or a surcharge on travel visas. You'd need privacy regulations that satisfy both GDPR and whatever the US eventually passes. And you'd need a phased rollout that starts somewhere manageable.
The phased rollout is actually the one piece that feels plausible. The EU's European health data space is essentially a regional pilot. If they can make cross-border prescriptions work within the 27 member states, where there's already a regulatory framework, a common privacy law, and political alignment, that proves the concept. Then you expand to associated countries, then to bilateral agreements with major travel partners.
But even within the EU, they've been working on this for years, and it's still not operational for the use case Daniel's describing. The EHDS is focused on care delivery, making your records available to a doctor treating you abroad. It's not a consumer-facing card, it's not checking drug legality, and it's definitely not handling pharmacy reimbursement.
The fill abroad feature is the hardest piece of all of this. Even if you solve the data problem, the payment problem is brutal. A pharmacy in Portugal needs to know what your US health plan covers, what the copay is, what the negotiated rate is for that specific medication, and how to submit a claim. US pharmacies struggle with this within a single insurance network. Now multiply by every insurer in every country.
There's a world where you sidestep the insurance problem entirely by making the card cash pay, with a reimbursement claim later. The card tells the pharmacy what you're prescribed, and that it's legal. You pay out of pocket. You submit the receipt to your insurer when you get home. That's not Daniel's full vision, but it solves the most acute problem, not getting arrested at customs and not running out of medication.
That's actually the minimum viable product here. A card that does two things. Proves your prescription is legitimate, and tells you whether your medication is legal at your destination. Everything else, the fill abroad, the insurance integration, the doctor verification, is nice to have, but those two core functions would prevent the worst outcomes.
And those two functions are technically achievable with existing infrastructure. The prescription verification could use the same digital signature approach that e-prescribing systems already use for controlled substances. The drug legality check could start as a regularly updated dataset from the INCB plus bilateral agreements, made available through an API. It wouldn't be comprehensive on day one, but it'd be better than a PDF.
The thing is, we keep circling back to the same point. The data exists. The technology exists. The standards exist. What doesn't exist is the political will and the business model. Nobody's going to make enough money from this to justify the investment, and no government is going to spend political capital on making life easier for foreign travelers with ADHD.
Unless there's a crisis that forces it. A few high-profile detentions, a diplomat's kid arrested for carrying Ritalin, a trade negotiation where pharmaceutical access becomes a bargaining chip. These things tend to move when the pain becomes acute enough.
Or when a regional system succeeds and creates pressure to expand. If the EU system works and a Spanish tourist can refill their blood pressure medication in Greece without friction, that becomes the baseline expectation. Countries outside the EU start looking like they're behind.
Before we wrap, Hilbert's been making faces. I think he has a story.
Late 90s. I worked for a medical logistics firm. We hand-carried prescription samples across borders for clinical trials. The official job title was medical courier. The actual job was getting a suitcase of unlabeled pills through customs without anyone asking questions.
What kind of pills?
Whatever the trial needed. Sometimes blood pressure medication, sometimes ADHD meds. Amphetamine-based, mostly. The kind of thing that looks very bad if you don't have paperwork.
Did you have paperwork?
Sometimes. The paperwork was usually wrong. Wrong country, wrong dosage, wrong name. The boss's philosophy was that a manifest in any language looked official enough if you waved it confidently.
I don't even know where to start with that.
Bangkok, 1998. I had a suitcase of unlabeled Lystix amphetamine before it was called Vyvanse, actually. This was still the clinical trial batch. Detained at the airport for 6 hours. They weren't interested in my manifest.
What got you out?
A local pharmacist. The trial coordinator knew someone who knew someone. This guy shows up, looks at the pills, writes something on a napkin and tie, and hands it to the customs officer. They talked for 10 minutes. I was released. The napkin said something about the medication being for a medical conference. It wasn't true, but it was written on a napkin by a man in a white coat, and apparently that was sufficient.
Do you still have the napkin?
Framed it. Hung in my kitchen for 12 years. Ex-wife made me take it down.
That napkin is the most functional international health system we've heard all episode.
It worked once. The boss used to say, the only international health card that works is cash. He wasn't wrong. We also had these business cards. He called them NFC-enabled as a joke. They were paper cards with a barcode printed on them. The barcode never scanned. I still have a box of them somewhere.
The barcode didn't scan because the data didn't connect to anything, or because the printing was bad.
Both. The URL it pointed to was a GeoCities page that hadn't existed since 97, but the boss kept handing them out, said perception was 90% of logistics.
I want to hear more about the boss.
He's dead now. Motorcycle accident in Phnom Penh, 2003. Left me his Rolodex. Half the numbers in it were for pharmacists who'd written things on napkins.
That's a very specific inheritance.
It's in a shoebox. I'm not saying the system works. I'm saying the system has never worked. The napkin was the system. The napkin is still the system, just with better fonts now.
I don't think I can argue with that.
Your card idea, the NFC thing, the global database, it's a good idea. But someone has to want to be the global pharmacy cop, and nobody does. Every country wants to enforce its own rules. Nobody wants to be the one saying, yes, this form prescription is valid here. That's a decision, not a lookup.
The napkin works because it's a person making a judgment call, not a system taking responsibility.
The napkin works because a pharmacist in Bangkok decided I wasn't a drug smuggler and put his own credibility on the line. You can't automate that.
That napkin story might be the most functional system we've heard all episode.
It really is. A human being with expertise, local knowledge, and the willingness to stick his neck out. That's what fills the gap between the data that exists and the system that doesn't.
The cutting room floor detail that didn't fit earlier. The INCB actually runs something called the International Import and Export Authorization System for Controlled Substances. It's a digital platform that tracks shipments of narcotics and psychotropic substances between countries. It works. It's operational. It's just not consumer-facing and never will be, because it's designed for regulators and manufacturers, not travelers. The infrastructure for tracking controlled substances across borders exists. It's just pointed at cargo containers, not people.
Which means the technical capacity is there. The INCB already does, at the commercial level, what Daniel's card would do at the personal level. Verify the substance, check the authorization, confirm the destination country's rules. It's just never been extended to individuals.
The question isn't, can we build it? The question is whether anyone will decide it's worth building for people rather than ballots.
Whether travelers would accept the privacy trade-off. A card that broadcasts your medical conditions to every border control system you pass through. That's a lot of trust to place in a system that, as Hilbert just demonstrated, has historically run on napkins and personal favors.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the napkin framed and the show running.
If you have a weird prompt, send it to us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts,
from sloth, from man, from long ear holes, my windbroms. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.